Today on The Grave Talks, Soldier on the Other Side, a conversation with Ellen McNeil. It started out like any other day for Ellen McNeil. Just another day of high school in the late 1970s, until something brought on a feeling of dread and unexplained sadness. She didn't quite know what to make of it, but soon more signs would follow that something was wrong. Very wrong. Fixtures moving, watches breaking, and so much more. What or who was causing these events? As it turns out, it was her brother. Tragically, though, her brother had been killed in Vietnam that very same day. He was back and planned on staying around, in fact, to help her navigate life from the other side, as it turns out. This was the start of countless paranormal experiences for Ellen. And this is her story today on The Grave Talks.
My brother was killed in Vietnam in 1971. Mm-hmm. He was 17 years old. I was 17 years old. He was 26. And he was buried on my 18th birthday. And up until that point, you know, I was just a quiet kid. Horror movies, dark shadows, and just being fascinated by horror movies.
Sure.
And being scared. Mm-hmm. And I never actually had a paranormal experience until he passed away. And we knew the day he died, whereas the army didn't come until the next day. So
sure.
By the time they got to the house, we were like, yeah, okay, come on in, have a cup of coffee, we know. And he's like, what? What do you mean you know? You know, because they come,
yeah.
They sent some poor guy with the telegram and, you know, the official person from the army.
Sure.
And everything that could have gone weird that day happened. And it was like he sent a very, very, very determined message to let my dad and I know that he was gone. All the way from Vietnam. Unexplained things that happened that day, and 50 years later, I still can't explain the things that happened.
I mean, walk me through that day a little bit. Tell me what it was like.
It was a rainy day, and I was going to high school, going to my classes, and you know, I was very quiet, unlike I am today. But it was, you know, just very. I was just quiet.
Sure.
I just existed there. And I was sitting in one of my classes, and I was like, oh, my God, what was that? What was, you know, I just felt myself physically jump from the inside, not outside. I was just like, oh, my God, what the hell was that? What caused that? I haven't even had lunch yet, you know. And I was like, oh my God, there's something wrong with me. I need to go to the nurse or do something. Something's not right. So I got up and I just walked out of the class, which I would never do. And I was walking around the school and I said, something has happened. Something terrible has happened. There's something really, really, really wrong in my little world here.
Sure.
So I called the house just to make sure everything was okay, and my grandmother answered the phone, and I was like, is everything all right? And she's like, why are you calling from school? And I said, I just don't feel that there's something wrong. There's something really wrong that a little teenage kid would pick up on.
Yeah.
And she goes, no, everything's fine. Your mother will pick you up because it's raining out. Everything's fine. And she went, oh, somebody's at the door. And I was like, don't answer the door. You know, don't answer the door. And the day, This was the day that the Army came to the house. Mm-hmm. And but it was the day before that I was like, what? Did something wrong? Maybe I'm coming down with something? What is going on here? But I was screaming at her not to answer the door. And she's like, oh, come on, I'll see you when you get home. Everything's fine, not to worry. And I'm just like, don't answer the door. And I just kept walking around the school, and I was like, something horrible has happened. There's something wrong. And I came out of the school, and my mother was facing the wrong way in the car. She always would face the school. Mm-hmm. She was facing home. And I just walked up to the car, and I opened the door, and she was sitting there bawling. And just like, I said, what has happened? And she just looked at me, and she said, you picked this up yesterday. And I said, picked up what? And she said, let's just go to the house. Let's just go to the house. So we get home, and we get the official word that, you know, he's gone.
Yeah.
And I go flying into my room, which used to be his room, which is the room I'm sitting in right now. And because it was raining out, I had closed the windows, you know, so the rain didn't come in. The cats couldn't get in there. And I come in, and his high school picture is face down on the floor that was up on a bookcase. My room looked like it had been ransacked, and nobody had been in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, my God. Everything that had a connection with him has been moved. It's like he was trying to warn us or do something. And the day before, I had had a terrible headache, and I normally don't get them. And I was like, you know what? I'm just gonna lay down before supper. And I was laying there, and I kept seeing fireworks. And I was like, all right, this is May. Why am I thinking of, you know, July fireworks? I said, this is very odd. And then my dad gets home from work, and he says, I'm going to go lie down. I have a terrible headache, awful headache. And he comes out like 2 hours later, and he said, I just had the weirdest dreams about fireworks. And my mother looked at both of us like, oh, my God, you know.
Yeah.
What's going on? You remember back in the 70s, everybody wore those big watches with the big, thick, you know, bands on them from England.
Sure.
You know, just to be very cool. So I took mine off, and I put it in this brass jewelry box that opens up like a trunk. Not just opens, it opens up curved. And when I did that, the springs shot out both sides, so that hits the floor. That one was my brother's. He liked mine, I liked his. So that was his jewelry box that mm-hmm. fell. And I was like, what is going on? My God. And all I can think of was he was just trying to send a message from across the world to let us know he was gone. You know, it was, I have no explanation.
Mm-hmm.
No explaining. I mean, there was no reason for his high school picture was up on a bookcase. Nobody had been in my room. The windows are shut. There's no reason for that to fall on the floor. And it, you know, and it was in, the glass was in a million pieces. And at that time, people were like, well, war was wrong. You shouldn't have been there. No, you know, none of these people that have been killed should have been there.
Sure.
And I had no one to talk to. Mm-hmm. Couldn't talk to my parents because we never grieved together.
Yeah.
We grieved separately to be strong for each other. And I kept all of this stuff inside me for 50 years. And 2 years ago at Gettysburg, I spoke in public about him for the first time. And the weird things that have happened since he died that I cannot explain. Like driving down the Southeast Expressway is a big, hideous highway in Boston, started pouring out. And my car died on the highway in this, you know, this terrible storm. And, you know, I have no power. And the cars are going by me and by me. And I said, we're going to die here. We're going to die here on the highway. And I'm screaming bloody murder because my daughter's in the back seat. And I'm like, I can't even get out of the car. I can't do anything. You know, the car is dead. And all of a sudden, the car starts moving. Like, I mean, you couldn't see anything. It was just downpours.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, the car is moving. Oh, God, I'm sorry, my voice is shaking. Going to the right, and something is pushing me off the highway. I can't even see in back of me. And just like that, it stops raining. I mean, this was like 10 minutes of terror, you know, being out on this expressway.
Sure.
And I roll down the window like, what just happened? You know, and I wanted to thank who was ever in back of me that I don't know how they saw me, but they got me off the highway. Mm-hmm. And I look up, and there's this gigantic black state trooper, tears streaming down his face. And I'm like, oh, my God, what happened here? And he said, ma'am, can I talk to you? Can you get in my car? And I was like, oh, my God, what did I do? What happened here? And I got into his cruiser, and he's sitting there. I mean, this guy was massive. Mm-hmm. And he's sitting there with tears streaming down his face, which, of course, gets me crying. And he said, you have a guardian angel. He said, I don't know how I saw you. I wasn't even in that lane. But something told me I needed to get over in the other lane because somebody was in terrible danger.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I pushed you off and I couldn't even see you, but I knew your car was there. And he said, someone told me, you got to save her.
Yeah.
You got to get her off. You got to get off the highway. And he said, have you lost somebody in your family? And I said, oh, yeah. And I told him about my brother and how he just protects our family, mm-hmm. how he watches over us. So the two of us sat there in his cruiser for about 20 minutes, hugging each other and crying. And he said, I've been a state trooper for like 20 years. And he said, I have never, ever had anything like this happen. He said, this was so powerful. I'll never forget that as long as I live. And going back to the fireworks, mm-hmm. he was killed by a landmine.
Yeah.
So it wasn't fireworks.
Sure. Sure.
It was a landmine. And he wasn't even supposed to go out. There was somebody that was sick as a dog, and he goes, oh, don't worry, you know, I'll go out on the trucks and,
yeah.
you know, do whatever. And as always, putting himself last and putting other people first.
Yeah.
And it cost him his life. So I have no doubt at all that he is around me. I have had total strangers at like a paranormal event
mm-hmm.
walk up to me and say, do you know that there is somebody with you?
Mm-hmm.
You can't see him. I can see him.
Yeah.
He's a very handsome guy with a mustache. That's my brother. He was a lady killer. The stinker got all the looks in the family. And I was like, how could you know that? And he said, he's standing right behind you.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, he's got his hands on your shoulder. And I'm freaking out. And I said, well, I can't feel his hands on him. And she goes, no, but he's here with you.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, my God. You know, I mean, the running joke with me and the paranormal is that I am the worst. I have no psychic abilities whatsoever. You know, and when something happens, it's huge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had another psychic look at me, and she said, I need to do a reading on you. And I'm like, yeah, sure you do. And she said, I need to talk to you about something. And I'm like, yeah, okay, of course you do. And I said, you know what? I don't know this woman. So I wear a bracelet for him,
mm-hmm.
with, you know, with his name and rank and, you know, I miss you, big brother, on it.
Sure.
And I said, and I have one for my daughter, too. I never take it off unless I have surgery. Otherwise, it stays on.
Yeah.
And I said, I don't know if this woman's full of crap or not. So I'm going to take off this bracelet so I am not wearing anything that she can pick up on.
Yeah.
So, she, you know, I'm very skeptical about, you know, people going, oh, yes, I see somebody with gray hair standing behind you. Yeah, okay, right. Of course you do.
Yeah, I mean, there's total ways to make that up, but there's also obviously people who do have the ability.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and those people I have the utmost respect for.
Mm-hmm.
There's like four of them that I've met that have just totally blown me away with the stuff they have told me.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no way that they would know that, you know, off Facebook or anything.
Yeah.
No way they would know this stuff. So she started talking to me, and she said, you have somebody that is right with you, very handsome guy. And I said, I know he's handsome. I hear it all the time, he's handsome. And, you know, she's looking at me. And then and I wear a lot of bracelets, and she's looking at the bracelets, and she's looking at me, and she said, he is upset that you took the bracelet off. Like, oh, and you know, and I'm looking at my arm to see if you could see an indentation that I had one, but
sure.
I don't,
yeah.
You know, that I'd taken it off. And she's like, all right, I'll tell her. She said, for God's sakes, put the bracelet back on. And she said, it means the world to him that you wear that. You know, and I was like, oh, my God. You know, you can't make that up.
No, you can't. I mean, let me ask you this. I mean, obviously, the day that the tragedy happened, when your brother passed, you had all those strange things kind of happening. And you were kind of realizing, There's somebody's trying to give us a sign here, and then you connect those dots. How are you processing that though? I mean, that's still kind of a lot to take in. Yeah, yeah.
I couldn't.
Yeah, I mean,
couldn't.
Were you?
I was 17 years old.
Sure.
Had nobody to talk to.
Yeah.
You know, nobody said, you know, you need a therapist.
Yeah.
To get you through this, and the most important thing that I learned is that they talk about the different steps of grief.
Sure.
But what they don't stress is that it's okay to be mad.
Yeah.
And I was full of 17-year-old rage that I had nowhere to put.
Mm-hmm.
So I just kept it inside. So to this day, if I know somebody is going through something,
mm-hmm.
and it's not easy to say, I need to talk to you. I need to talk about this. It's not easy to admit that you can't deal with something.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, listen, come over here, sit down, let's talk. I know how bad this hurt, and I know how badly it hurts that you can't talk about it. And if you want to, there are people like, oh, that's fine. No, you'll be fine. You know, time will make everything all better. No, it doesn't.
Yeah.
It doesn't unless you are able to get the anger out. Because for decades, I was like, why him? Not me.
Sure.
God knows he was gorgeous. You know, I mean, the minute you met him, you were just like, oh, my God, this guy is so cool, and he's so funny. And he just, I don't know anyone who didn't adore him. You know, he was just such a great person. And I said, why would you take him? I haven't made a mark on the world. I sit in my room and watch dark shadows and horror movies. And, you know, I'll be missed for a while. But he made a mark.
Mm-hmm.
And why did you need him so badly?
Yeah.
You know, so I was angry at God. I was angry at the world. I was just like, what have I done to deserve still being here? And he's gone. You know, and that's a brutal thing to walk around carrying.
Sure. When did you start to kind of realize, I mean, after obviously you got those signs that day, but then it continued throughout, and it continues throughout your life. So after that day, after you had those initial signs, how did things kind of progress, and where did you kind of start to kind of go, oh my God, I really think my brother is following me around everywhere. How, I mean, was there a moment? Did it take some time?
What saved me was Ghost Hunters.
Really?
When that show came on, I was almost literally glued to the TV set. I was like, oh my God, they get it. They understand. They know how to reach out to people that have all sorts of things happening, and they can't talk to people because they're going to be like, oh my God, you're insane. That's not happening.
Sure.
Ghosts aren't real. Nothingness. And I was so floored by them. And I went to see them at a convention that they did. And I'm just sitting there very quietly, tears streaming down my face. I'm not crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And they understand. So I met with them. You know, I introduced myself to them. You know, people can trash both of them as much as they want. Unless you've met this guy, these two guys, and have dealt with them on a personal basis, you have no idea what wonderful people they are.
Mm-hmm.
Honest to God, I mean, Jason Hawes and I sat out on the huge porch up at Mount Washington at 3:00 in the morning with him telling me stuff, me pouring my heart out to him. And I said, you know what? I want to help people. And that's when Spirits of New England was born. I said, I never want to hear of another person that has an unexplained experience, a terrible, tragic death in their family, and they have no one to talk to.
Sure.
So we're one of those teams, you know, people say, oh, have you gone here? No, I don't care about those places.
Yeah.
Thousands of people go visit them. That's wonderful. Someday I'll go visit them and investigate them. I want to do residentials and help people. And there aren't that many teams that want to do that. They
sure.
don't want to get involved with the families. They don't want to get involved with the drama. I mean, Spirits have been together for 11 years. I still keep in touch with clients. You know, I make it very clear, I have done everything I can to give you control of your house back, to give you the confidence to stand up to whatever is happening in your house, and given you the faith to follow that. You know, and there are teams that just like, no. I just want to be able to say I went to this location and that location. That's fine. That's not That's ghost hunting.
Yeah,
That's not a paranormal investigator.
Yeah, you're there for the human aspect of it to help people work through it.
We work full times. We pay for our own gas, our own food, our own hotels. We don't get paid. You know, we do this because we want to help people. And with the biggest compliment you can possibly get as a paranormal investigator is for somebody to look at your website and say, you know what? I like these people. I trust these people. I would welcome these people in my home. You know, convention that Grant and Jason were at, you know, I mean, it was when Ghost Hunters had first come out and it was all exciting and, you know, people were all pumped up. And all of a sudden, everybody's head starts turning, and this team comes walking down the aisle, you know, with the jumpsuits on and the boots and the ghost hunter, you know, the Ghostbusters look to them, sits down on the front row, and I just wanted to go down there and just bitch slap them all, every single one of them. And just say, you are not Janet Jackson's backup dancers.
Yeah.
You are here to help people. You are idiots. I don't care what is happening in my house. If you guys showed up in my front porch, I would slam the door in your face.
Yeah, no, I understand.
You know, you're not serious about this.
No.
You want to get looked at. You're a joke.
No, and there's a lot of that out there. Let me ask you about your family, you know, even prior to you getting into starting your own group and investigating and helping people. Did any other members of your family have experiences with your brother or, you know, whether they accepted it as well as you did or not? Did anybody reach out and go, is this happening to you?
When my father said that he was seeing fireworks.
Yeah, okay.
And my father was a big John Wayne kind of guy.
Yeah.
So he wouldn't admit to anything. And my mother would just be like, no, that's not going to happen. That didn't happen. And which was another reason why I couldn't talk to them and say, there's something going on here and I don't understand. You know, I mean, my brother was waked in my church, and they had his casket there overnight with the flag and an honor guard to protect him. And I was paranoid that some anti-war asshole was going to run into the church and tip him over or do something horrible. So I slept in the choir pews. I'm like, I can't do anything for you, but I'm here and I will protect you.
Yeah.
And I'm going to stay here all night just to make sure you're okay. You know, and my parents were like, you can't do that. You can't do that. And I said, watch me. I said, I never got to say goodbye to him. I never got to spend my birthday with him. I said, I'm going to be here, and I will sit here in this church, and I will watch his coffin, and I will do what his little sister can do to protect him. Yeah. They tell you he was handsome. Yeah.
I think this has been mentioned a time or two, and he probably...
Yeah, I think I might have insinuated that.
He probably still smiles when you say that.
Yep. Oh, my God. Well, he just...
Let's move ahead to the areas where, you know, you started to get into this. You started to realize at that time a community was starting to form of people who are like-minded and accepting and are open to hearing these stories and just want to help each other. How did that begin for you as far as, you know, getting into the world of, okay, I want to do this. I've never done
this
before.
And you'll love this.
Yeah.
I got the dreaded phone call. You're the only one I know that I can talk to about this. And I was like, oh my God, this just got real.
Here you go.
And this was, I was like, really? You want me to come to your house? And, you know, and at that time I was armed with my fierce flashlight and a tape recorder, and I immediately, it was so funny, I just switched modes, and I said, tell me what's going on. Is it frightening you? Do you feel like it's somebody that you know? What's going on? So she told me, and she said, you're the only person I could tell this to. And I said, okay, you know, I said, I've known you for 40 years. I said, I'm not going to start rumors about you now. Mm-hmm. And she said, I saw a full-body apparition of an American Indian in my dining room. And she said it like, and it's like, what? Because she was just ashamed.
Yeah.
She was ashamed, and she was petrified that she was talking about it. And I was like, oh my God, how am I going to verify this? How am I going to help her? And I said, okay, all right, we're going to put on our big girl panties and call the town historian. Mm-hmm. And I said, Dave, because I had told him I was going to start doing this. And I said, do you know anything about American Indians in Winthrop? Oh my God! They have this, and they have bones that they dug up, and they brought to Harvard University, which I thought was very disrespectful because they should be with their tribe, mm-hmm. you know, right off the bat. And he said they used to parade them up and down Bartlett Road, and it was just awful. Where does she live? Bartlett Road.
Okay.
Yeah, and so I was able to say to her, you're not crazy. This is how they were treated here. And that they're out in Deer Island. And I was able to find out all this information about, you know, they had the Irish that came in and they had the Indians that were here. And I said, these guys, these poor people were paraded up and down your street. And I said, if they have reached out to you, I said, they trust you. And I said, does it scare you? And she went, no. She said, I just couldn't believe it, you know. And I said, welcome him. Tell him to pull up a seat and watch TV with you. Just say, listen, I can't change what happened to you, but you've got a safe place here. And you and everyone you know is welcome to come in my house. You know, and 30 years later, she still gets visited by Indians in her house. And it gave her such peace to know that I understood, that I wanted to help her, that she wasn't crazy, and that she's got some new friends now. I've never seen them, but she does.
That wraps up part one of our conversation with Ellen McNeil. In part two, what was Ellen's goal when she started investigating the dead and people's paranormal experiences? What happens when the dead understand that they are, in fact, dead? Is there a risk involved with trying to make peace with those who've passed on? And did getting permission from Ellen's deceased brother to stop grieving through a clairvoyant help Ellen to do just that? For The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.